Jingle bells. Jingle bells. Jingle bell, bell, bell. Welcome to Burnt Out Coffee. Welcome to Burnt Out Coffee. I am Enrique Rosado. I'm Ryder Rosado. Wait, who's that with me? That's Oscar Fernandez at Oscar Farts. If you don't know our names by now, well, that's why we do the introductions. And today we're jumping right into our our Christmas month. Also, for this year, we're going with the strong theme of technically it's Christmas. All the properties.
Yeah, your Die Hard, your Batman Returns.
Ooh, your Iron Man 3s, your Gremlins, because technically that's a Christmas movie. I saw my father. His neck snapped in the chimney. His body burned. Merry Christmas. But Oscar. Now there was a contention you mentioned. You've been hitting me with these random gremlin memes. Now I feel like you misconstrued something because it actually connects to the topic we're talking about today. I never said Gremlins wasn't a Christmas movie. I said Gremlins is never picked a lane. It's not a family-friendly movie.
Because listen, a Christmas movie didn't mean family-friendly. I just watched Krampus. That's not a family
No. That's what I'm saying. That's the point I'm getting to. Because today, we're talking about the sci-fi original series. Not comic, because it's based off a comic. Happy. Based off the comic Happy by Grant Morrison and
Grant Morrison.
Oscar, can you Google the artist's name? I think it was like Robertson, like David Robertson. Correct. But I didn't want to say it wrong. I had it all in my fucking head! Because I actually read that comic since it came out every year on Christmas multiple times because I actually fucking love the comic. And that's why on this episode of Burnt Out Coffee, technically it's Christmas, I picked this one because I wanted to. So, just to give
the
people...
The illustrator is Derek Robertson.
Hey, I was wrong and right. I was right with Robertson, but I forgot it was Derek. I said David. That's on me. Sorry, Derek Robertson. The reason this matters is because Happy is a 4-issue comic series that they stretched into 8 episodes, almost an hour long, or was it 12 episodes? I want to say it was 8, right, Oscar?
It was 8.
Yeah, but they're hour-long episodes. And you've never read the comic, correct?
No, I've never read the comic.
It's a good comic. I like it a lot. So we're gonna talk about this because what we do is we break down the elements for the cinematography, the acting, the story, and everything, and we compare it to today's standards. Normally, and does it hold up? We would do older properties, but today is, does it stack up? Does this now more contemporary piece stack up to what we build now? And I want to start off with talking a bit of the plot. Not necessarily going through beat by beat, but talking about elements in the plot. And one thing, sure, I want to mention in this, so people have a basic idea what it is, an ex-cop gets entangled with a mob where he learns a password to a secret account that will, buttloads of shit will happen, like money, blackmails, everything. The thing about that is, all of a sudden, a little girl is kidnapped by a deranged, creepy Santa. And her imaginary friend, Happy, a blue flying unicorn, finds this ex-cop and asks him to help. And he goes on the escapade of trying to find this child. Now, we're going to be spoiling Happy. So if you haven't seen the show, come back to this episode after you've seen it. Or if you don't care about spoilers, roll right in. So, Oscar, I want to start with this conversation off by pointing out the very fucking obvious. This show is violent and twisted as fuck.
Yes, it is quite graphic. It's definitely not for children whatsoever.
I talked about Gremlins being, oh, that's dark. I will counter my own words of the chimney.
Yeah.
And I will counter it. Yeah. I'm countering it. I'm countering it with my go-to when people go, how fucked is this show? Oh, graphic content warning for anyone listening. I'm not going to hold back. Okay?
Bruh.
The fucking baby. Yes, the fucking baby in the microwave. Holy shit. Holy shit. The baby.
I've only daydreamed about that.
Microwave. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I talked about a gremlin being microwaved. This went in a gremlin, bitch.
You can't talk anymore. Baby. I want to rewind time.
No.
And be like, yo, remember Happy?
No. You know why? Gremlin, you even said so yourself, was trying to be a family-friendly movie. Anywhere in this show did it say it was family-friendly?
No, it said gratuitous violence, nudity, and strong language.
Yep, indeed. So let's break down the story elements in itself. Going through it, I feel this... I'm going to say something that may be showing my hand a little early. So, Oscar, you speak freely about how you feel about this, but I'm going to show my hand a little early. Is a masterclass in how to adapt a comic. Any story.
I haven't read the comic, so I can't agree or disagree with you.
I understand that. But the reason I say that, then maybe you'll enjoy this. 4 issues of a comic does not mean 8 hours of a show, correct?
No.
Would you say that? Like, hell, people adapt graphic novels into movies, which are less time and more content. I think this is so good because never did you ever feel that this show was stretching something too far? Story-wise.
No, because there is a good balance with all the characters. There's multiple characters and they get some pretty good amount of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
So if it just revolved around Sax and Happy, I felt like it would have been stretched.
Yeah.
But because they keep going back and forth, the other detective, the ex-wife, and you know, the mob, because there's like it almost gets to the point where like the mob is a subplot.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the beginning, it's like the main. And then once Happy comes in and you get to like the deranged Santa guy, the mob stuff almost becomes like a subplot that they kind of keep revisiting. So no, I don't think so.
I like that because I recently saw an interview like in preparation of this with Grant Morrison, and he did it with Sci-Fi, and they asked a really good question. Because Grant Morrison, do you know who he is in the comic world? I know you're familiar with his work. I don't know if you could just... Got it. So you know how crazy and fucking weird this dude is, right? But also secretly a fucking genius in my mind. Like, he is one of the writers that I'm like, people say he's a little overrated. I don't believe so. I think he's earned his spot and where he is. It's just some of his stories get overblown and some don't. But this story, I feel like, is underappreciated because the comic's tone is the tone of the show, just ironically shorter. But the show is so well done. And he was in the writer's room. He was in the writer's room for the show. And that's not like normal. Like normally they would be producers, executive producers. An example would be The Walking Dead. How even partway through the show, they kicked him out. They kicked him out and went, no, we're just going to do our own thing. You go do something else. And now he's working on Incredibles.
We all know how that turned out.
Mm-hmm. He's working on Invincible now. But the thing I wanted to say is...
I'm excited for that.
I'm so fucking excited. Oh, I love the comic. Looking back into it, he said this in the interview that I found so interesting. And this is like the thing I want to talk about. They asked him, how does it feel being in the writer's room? How did you feel that they took basically one of your babies and like changed it? And he went, I had no illusions that this was going to be a translation. And that's how he described it. He's like, this is a translation of my original work. Because he's like, the things you can do in comics and the things you can do in movies and the way you have to tell it and the pacing and everything, it's different. It's so different.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was so willing to roll with it, he even said, I was excited to hear what other people had to say and how they can build this into a show that was beautiful, but at the same time stay true. And I'm just like, this is how you need to think about adaptations. This right here is the most important key. Because when you look at the show, and you know the comics like I do, you see it is like literally looking at cousins. Like, oh, I see how you guys are so similar. You guys are so similar. There's so many plot points that are the same. But you guys are so fucking different. They're so fucking different. That it is fascinating. It's fascinating. Because some of the subplots in the comic, they expand. Some of the plots, and then they even create new ones or just over-exaggerate. And it's so good. So what are some memorable moments in the story that stood out to you?
My thing with it is more of like the tone of the show. It has very serious elements, but the main character is so ridiculous in his behavior and his actions. It doesn't take you out of it, but it just changes your mindset to where you're like, okay, let's not take this as serious. And especially once Happy finally comes in, but it's like what I did enjoy about it is we talk about, like, when we talk about anime, like the martial arts, the detail and all that of the fighting styles and in movies and things like that, like this seems realistic. Like his fighting style is just brawling.
Yes.
And this show is just shows really good, just street level, just brawling, blunt instruments. There's no finesse to it
without oversimplifying it.
And that's how the main character Sax is. There's like, he's just a big blunt object. There's no refinement to him whatsoever in the first few episodes, and he's just like this force of nature. And like every time it gets to him, I know something ridiculous is going to happen. They set that tone. It's like, okay, we have like this real world, this like real problems, these situations going on. But every time we get to this detective, expect something wacky, crazy to happen.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, like, how do you feel like it balanced the like the tone with it? Because with it, with
the show, I like it because without it, it would feel too dark.
Yes, that's the thing. Like, this show balances, because I wasn't joking about like that scene was dark with the baby in the microwave. It balanced some of the darkest ideas, the darkest like mentality, and that's seen in Morrison's work where he tackles dark things, but he brings it in a light way. And I feel like this show translated that and evolved that mentality, because there are many scenes that pop in my head that give real ideas and explores them in a comical way, even though they're dark as hell. Like, two that pop in my head was the whole symbolism when, like, remember, I think he got really high and like his head exploded and he was like in this weird trippy world. But in the same episode, we learned some dark information. And as well as, I don't know about you, I found this scene very fucking funny. The AA meeting for the imaginary friends. There ain't no monsters under the bed, just dicks. Just big old dicks.
And now it was for the talking record, about. I made it to episode 4.
I will shut up then about that. I will finish the joke, but I won't. Okay, thank you for telling me that. I won't spoil past episode 4. But that moment was talking about.
Episode was almost an hour long, so I was like, I got 4 in me.
Yeah, like I will say, correct me if I'm wrong, people, but I think that was talking about also like a kid was molested or something, and it was talking about like how the imaginary friends like interpreted that and stuff. But like the show,
it happens.
Sticking to the first 4. It tackles really dark ideas and really dark, how you say, topics, but it's so funny. Like, and that is 100% attributed to the characters. Like, how do you feel like Sax is as a character for you? Like, as a leading man, as your leading man and your moral compass.
It's refreshing, honestly. He's definitely an anti-hero. On the verge of almost just being a terrible person. He's a guy that is at the bottom of the barrel, and like he kind of like part of him wants to give up and just die, but there's something in him that true person inside of him is just keeping him going through all of this crap. So you realize there's something there, but it's hard to see that because of the man he's become. And so you have to keep going on with the show to realize how I became that way. But it's just like, it's different, and therefore it engages you and it's entertaining. It's just like, oh wait, like, this is not a character I'm used to. This isn't like the bad cop that does blah, blah. No, this guy is like washed up, like drugs, alcohol. Mm-hmm. His mentality is like, fuck this, fuck that. I'm just gonna do me. But there's something inside him that's still driving him to be a better person. It's very strange, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Because looking at this is... So if this... What I'm about to say, if it sounds a little incoherent, it's an idea I've been bouncing around in my head, and like now it just came to the forefront. And when I mean bouncing in my head, like when I first saw the show and when I read it, this is a really good noir detective story. Like a comedy version of it, obviously. And a wacky... Like, yeah. It's noir detective on drugs, in my opinion, because a noir detective story follows a anti-hero who is supposed to be, one, the epitome of what male masculinity is, even though it isn't. It's the thing I like about the show is they show the toxicity of it. It's supposed to be a detective story with, like, gruesome stuff. The detective is always supposed to be a anti-hero. Like, he is not supposed to be a good dude in a lot of detective stories. They're not always a good dude. They're supposed to be a dude who knows how it is. They're supposed to be basically a good criminal when you look at it, in the sense of they're willing to get dirty, but they are not monsters themselves. They're like, I'm not willing to kill out of nothing, but I am going to kill you if you try to kill me. They're supposed to be act outside the court, the side of the law. When you look at it and the elements they talk about, noir detective stories talk about dark subjects. They talk about a whole bunch of things, but this is if you grabbed one of those, put it in the modern day, but also went, can we inject this with drugs and funny? Because it does a good job balancing the tone of what a noir detective story is, which is the dark, gritty, down-to-earth story. But then they put something so, not trying to be funny, happy, that it feels like these two things
very,
should not...
Very ridiculous, yes.
Yeah, they should not work together, but with the way they write it, the way they structure it, because it's not just in sex. Looking at the mob, they are similar to the tone of the show. Like, the mob boss, Blue, is this quirky, not like overzealous, like, huh, yuck, let me tell you my story, kind of goofy. He's like a monster, but he speaks in such an erratic kind of like, What do you mean, man? Like, I don't know what you're trying to say. I don't get, like, what... Like, he has to balance being a father. Like, in one scene, he's talking about his wife, balance being a father and a husband, even though they all clearly know he's a mob man. He's like, I gotta go kill someone. I gotta take care of fucking business because I'm the only one who can do anything in here. And, like...
Yeah, he definitely... Yeah. I get that. It's just, he was a very interesting character, sort of, like, his cadence of how he speaks and all that. It was just like, he's very controlling, but it's like, he, like, his tone of voice is like, it always kind of gives you an option, but really there's no option.
And obviously we can't ignore Happy himself, the character played by Patton Oswalt, like, is such a...
I immediately recognize the voice.
I love Patton Oswalt. The thing is, like, you expect Happy to be so one note, and he's not throughout the show. He finds a way to balance it and everything. Like, I'm just gonna say, like, the show does a fantastic job with their characters, so much so, with every character, from the partner, from his ex-wife, from everything. I think the show does such a good job with characters themselves that I was never bored or unentertained just seeing them on the screen. The series of events kept moving. The pace of the show is really good. Like, they keep shit moving, but it's also the characters are so fucking interesting that I find them, like, I love them.
Yeah, because when you start learning more about, like, the girl's mom and her relationship to the other characters and things like that, it just like keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper. At first, it's just like, oh, she's a victim. Oh, wait, she's a victim in other ways as well. Let's connect these characters together. And it's just like the other detective. And then, you know, it's just like, even like the creepy doctor guy that works for the mob.
Oh, like, him.
Just,
There's a scene you'll see later on. I'm give you a hint right now.
Yeah, like
little salami. You don't get it yet.
That was in the beginning.
Oh, okay, never mind. You saw it?
Yeah. Like, he's just a wackadoodle freaking weird character, and I was just like, oh, Lord, this is gonna get crazy.
Like, the characters in the show are so well thought out, and the beauty of it, and this is something people need to know about, like, when you create something, the characters do not just have an arc in the story. They serve a purpose in the story, so much so they all push the story forward. Now, this is going to be a weird comparison. Look at Tolkien's work in the movies. I'm going to speak. You know, I haven't read the books. The majority of the cast, correct me if I'm wrong, they all push the story forward. There is no, like, Merry and Pippin ain't just Merry and Pippin going, I'm on the adventure. They have an effect in the world that eventually affects the ongoing struggle everyone's going through. The fact that, like, Frodo can leave the group and go on his own little adventure but still have an effect on everyone, and everyone have an effect on him, implies they all have a way to push the story. Same with Happy. There isn't a character that isn't pushing the narrative forward, so in the end you don't feel like any character is useless. You go, like, this wouldn't have happened without it. And going on to the next point I want to talk about with you, and I want your opinion definitely first and foremost, I'm going to combine two things because I feel like they go hand in hand. Cinematography and special effects. This is a TV show from Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi is known, used to, at least when we were younger. I don't know how it is now because I haven't seen new Sci-Fi besides Happy, of how their CG used to be known for and their movies and stuff like that. How do you
feel? I mean, like,
The
old stuff was definitely part of its time, late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
With, like, their original films were basically just, like, these weird little movies. Were just really bad CG dinosaurs and alligators and sharktopuses. And
sharktopus.
Even, like, Stargate SG-1 even had, like, some funky, you know, CG here and there. But it's just the part of its time. Now that the technology is more affordable, and companies are willing to put more money into these things, into these IPs, that's been showing a lot. Happy, I mean, he's a CG-looking little horse, and honestly, it looks better than that Earwig Witch Miyazaki movie is coming out. But, like, it's not up to par with a lot of big name movies, but it was just enough. It was in this weird, like, little middle ground where, like, the light shading wasn't way off, and, you know, it just fit in the world. And the interaction, I don't know what they used, a tennis ball, wherever the hell they used to represent Happy, but, like, the interaction with the real life characters, it was very much like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. You felt like, you know, there was an actual, like, touching. I'm touching this creature, even though it's obviously not there. So I never felt off about that like I do a lot with some other ones, where it's like their eyes are, like, not really looking at it correctly, like Looney Tunes Back in Action, or it's like when I'm reaching out for something, it feels like they're grabbing Happy, you know? And even like his reaction with other characters that can't see him and things like that, like it worked pretty well. I liked it a lot.
I actually think, and including the cinematography, just like how they shot, how they framed everything, I don't know if it's because I love like the original source material, that I was actually very worried with how this will look and like how they would interpret it. I think I'm gonna say something that people probably will go, what? I think for TV specifically, this is one of the best looking shows in my mind, hands down, combining CG elements to how they framed choreography, how they framed just basic scenes, how they paced it, just in a cinematography aspect of literally the film, it was beautiful.
There are some beautiful scenes, like every single car crash is a beautiful scene.
Yes,
like the slow-mo, or like it's like him, and then all of a sudden he's like sideways and he's on the road, and like just that seamless shot all together I was just like, damn, okay.
And even like looking at, this is a gruesome scene, but the baby microwave scene, they never say it out loud. The baby was inside the microwave. They show you it without you ever having to see inside the microwave. It is.
Yes. And they get away with a lot.
Yeah. Like they frame stuff, like their visual storytelling in itself, from the crazy chaotic scenes to the CG scenes to just the reveals of stuff. Like, I'm not going to tell you, like, cause it's later on, but how they reveal things and it's like, I would describe it as a really, the reason I brought up noir is because it is a very detective story, visual story, that they grab elements of the sweeping pans, the close up to items and stuff, and also inject the craziness you see of these weird sights, these out of mind ideas that should feel out of place, but in this dark, grimy world, the craziness, it acts so well. It's like lighting. It's like the darks and the lights right next to each other. And it's like, I think visually, this was really well done. Like, this is on par with TV shows in my mind, like visually. Breaking Bad. I don't know if I would go Sopranos. Sopranos had a really good visual. I wouldn't say it beats them. I'm not saying any of these beat them. I'm saying they could walk next to him. And like Stranger Things, gotcha. Definitely. Stranger Things definitely has a very good visual storytelling because they grab ideas from like old 80s films and like grab those shots from them. Whereas like this one has shots that visually sound beautiful. Like, I don't know. I was impressed beyond with what I expected. So that's what I'm saying.
It's definitely more than what I expected from a show. Mm-hmm. Not just on sci-fi, but on television. Like,
that's what I'm saying, yes.
It was more graphic. I thought it got away with a lot. I was like, this is on TV?
Yeah.
But like the amount of like the sort of like the production value for it, like you're saying, like the cinematography is a whole nother level. Like they had to have some like experienced talent working on this.
Or some like,
because really it's good just like,
yeah.
Yeah, it was just something. It was just like, this isn't something where it was like, you know, someone like me who was inexperienced and wanted to make a film and made like a crappy CG rendition of one of my favorite comic books or something like that. You know, these people obviously have made stuff before and have honed their craft, and I was just like, man, this is some top tier stuff for this show. Like, not to downplay Happy, but I was like, really, for this show?
Yeah, no, it didn't need to be this good, and I think it was way better than it needed to be, and it made it like such an amazing like piece. Like, did you see the Chinatown scene? I don't know if that happened yet in episode 4, where he goes to Chinatown. No, okay, it's fine. I was gonna say that's a beautiful scene that has good choreography in it too, like fighting wise, and also. I enjoyed, this is the thing I'm trying to remember, because I have like so many like facts in my head of just different shit. I don't know where I'm blending it, but I love that it took place in New York. As someone currently living in New York, I enjoy it because I'm like, I see why a lot of people place stuff here. It's not even because New York is amazing. I'm like, no, I feel like you can get away with a lot of the stuff that happens in these kind of products here because it has a believability that kind of weird shit can happen here. Not even negative, just positive too. Like, just anything can happen here. Not because I'm like, oh, it's the greatest city, but I'm saying because it is a playground where that can be played with. But two, I think they filmed some of this in Canada, if I'm remembering correctly. Because they actually used...
They filmed a lot of stuff in Canada.
They used Vancouver's, what they call Times Square, Canada's Times Square, for, I think it was Happy's Times Square. I don't quote me 100%, but I remember they also filmed some shots here in New York too. So that's what I'm saying, like that. So we talked about the plot a bit. We talked about the characters. We talked about the visuals. Now I kind of want to bring it to you. What is something you want to talk about? Positive, negative? Because I'm not hiding my biasism in this at all. Like, I enjoy this for obvious reasons. But I want you to bring in, not on purpose, but if there was something you felt was negative or held it back, or just a point I didn't talk about that you actually didn't like. What do you feel, Oscar?
Well, like, I really, I'm going to finish the show. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have time to do it within.
Oh, yeah. No.
Filming this. But like, it's just like I'm enjoying it thus far. Like I said, like the spectacle of it, I'm surprised by as far as the quality of the show, which is making me want to finish it even more. But not only that, but like the characters in and of themselves, I'm not. It's a weird thing because like I watch the main character because I want to see what ridiculous thing he's going to do next, rather than like I am someone who, because a lot of our heroes and things like that, we feel a kinship towards, like we feel like we can relate to them. Mm-hmm. This character, I don't feel like I can relate to him whatsoever. So it's just a very strange relationship I have with these characters.
Mm.
But it's very strange. So it's like they make it to where these characters who the average person wouldn't have a reason to, you know, have a kinship with, you're wanting to follow their story and keep going and things like that. It's very strange. I've never, I won't say never, but I can't remember a time where I've had that. I've always felt some aspect of a hero or character I can kind of relate to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting for me, you know? And this big one is, do you think this show is a Christmas show?
Okay.
Does it have the Christmas spirit?
Okay. So one, just to quickly touch on the point you said earlier, I have a very tiny, but like, I do have a kinship for the character, but not in the sense of I see myself in him. I just see someone I wish would redeem themselves. In my view, my kinship is like,
I got you.
I don't see me. So I see a friend who went down a dark. Yes. Yes, and I feel like the story does a good job portraying that. But yes, I agree with like the, I don't personally see myself in it. But your question was,
do you see this as a Christmas show? Yeah.
Okay.
Or is it just a story in the time period
like,
of
Like, is Christmas? This technically like, Gremlins, Christmas?
Like, Gremlins is in the time period of Christmas, but I can see sort of the Christmas spirit being an emphasis, like, you know, about, you know, family and all that good stuff. I can see sort of that in there. Now, in this show, can you see that to where it has the Christmas spirit in it?
Okay. So, I'll give you the simple answer, yes. To give you the longer answer, yes, because it doesn't just have the wrapping paper of Christmas in a sense of it takes place in Christmas. The villain is a Santa. I feel, and it also plays with some tropes in Christmas, like the magical friend. Like Frosty, the snowman, elf, a whole bunch of stuff like where they're like, oh, this is a magic friend. You have the imaginary friend that is embodying it. And there's a lot. They never hide that this is happening during Christmas. That's another thing I feel like it also puts it. Like, it doesn't just go, oh, this is happening at Christmas. This is like, no, this is during Christmas. The villain is Christmas. The stuff that's happening to them, they may not do because of Christmas, et cetera, et cetera. But the reason I say yes is because it actually does have a strong, not just family, but it has a strong message of weirdly Christmas. And I don't mean like it is a Christmas message through and through, like Jolly Holly. It's more of it takes a darker, weirder approach to the Christmas story. I'm not trying to spoil stuff for you, but you can even just look at it as a story of a man who wants to redeem his life and go further. What's that movie? Miracle on 34th Street? How the man like goes through the redemption arc of his own self. That is a very Christmas thing where not even trying to be funny or like go too, I'm not trying to like stretch things too far, but looking at the idea of Christmas being based off Jesus, one idea that a lot of people like to put in Disney in Christmas movies is the idea of rebirth. You are reborn as someone better on Christmas Day. And I wouldn't say he's reborn as a new man, Jesus-y, but he is on that path. Again, not trying to spoil stuff for you, but he is, in a sense, reborn. That is the journey he is trying to go on.
I'm not feeling it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not feeling it right now as far as like the themes and spirit of Christmas, but I feel like I need to finish it before I come to that conclusion.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'm trying to avoid like specific points in the story, but like I feel like it's Christmas also because it's not just a redemption art. It's like you could see it as Scrooge, just a grumpy man trying to do it. And that's what the whole season is in itself. Like Christmas, Like, Christmas movies are
just... This is just a crazy, fucked up version
of
Christmas Carol.
Yes, it is. There you go. There you go. Because the thing is, like, with Christmas films, it's never...
Grant Morrison, you stole your idea from Charles Dickens.
Call him out! Do it! Nah, the thing is, with Christmas movies, I always find it funny because Christmas does have a very specific feel. And I like that we chose the theme, technically, this is Christmas. Because my argument where Gremlins didn't feel 100% like a Christmas movie it is a Christmas movie with the messaging and stuff. My idea was just they didn't pick a lane of tone, but it still feels like a Christmas movie for all the reasons you said. And looking at this one, it feels like a Christmas movie because when you dissect Christmas movies, the majority of the message is, I am a better person now, or be a better person. This is, and family, or pseudo family, friends. This is not a season to be alone. This is a season of spreading will to others, as well as being a better person within yourself. When you dissect Christmas movies, look at Elf. It's a story of a man trying to be better and a man trying to find his family and grow himself and discover himself. Looking at films like Nightmare Before Christmas, legitimately the same idea. A person wants to get better. He uses Christmas as a vehicle to get there because of the season represents that. And that's what I'm saying Happy does
and
too.
And the make-believe portion is Zooey Deschanel falling in love with Will Ferrell. Yes, I see that.
That movie gave a lot of us hope. You shut your mouth. You shut your mouth. Not all of us. Not all of us look like a brown, short Johnny Depp. Some of us look like a fucking Will Ferrell and have to make it work. They have to fucking make it work.
Listen, this is all charisma. Like this is very misleading, people. I'm 5'2", weigh 105 pounds. No one's going after this.
This is misleading, people. It's all charisma. You knew that from when you looked at me. I am gorgeous. That's not even a lie. I look good, baby. Look at this face.
Yeah, you look like a very pale Big Lebowski.
I look like Big Lebowski mixed with Jesus. I am literally the embodiment of modern day Christmas. It's about milk, cookies. Enough. I am make believe Jesus right now. I'm what you see at the churches, not real Jesus. I'm what the Jesus people portray.
And I am real Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, your hair needs to be curlier. It needs to be curlier like mine. Like if we switched, like if my hair was straight and you had this hair, we would be the image. Actually, I think Jesus actually had short hair. This is becoming a very dangerous topic we're talking about. But yeah, if you had shorter, curly hair, you would look like Jesus.
Well,
and
according to his modern historians, Jesus, according to the traditions of the time for Jewish men, he had a short beard and short hair.
Yeah, that I knew he had short hair. I didn't know if he had a beard. Okay.
Then he did have a beard, but they kept it short.
Yes. So you look like Jesus and I look like Santa?
Like my hair is not probably, he probably had curlier hair than this. You know what? Maybe he used a flat iron. Okay, he's Jesus. Maybe he wanted to look good.
He had a flat iron in that time? Jesus! He's Jesus. Jesus. No one gives a shit about you turning water into wine and feeding people. The fuck is that? This is a flat iron. No, what is it connected to? It's a cord that gives you electricity. Fucking what? Jesus is like, I'm living in the 21st century, bitch. Get on my level. I'm already watching Happy on Netflix. The fuck is a Netflix? This really turned into a weird conversation.
It just really like did, show. And it's just as weird as Happy, so it's appropriate.
Yay! I guess we can end it now with a simple question, Oscar. Do you think Happy stacks up to modern standards?
I think the overall, like we've discussed, like the actual quality is superior to a lot of TV shows that are on today. I feel like it's on a whole other level. Like this is like a string of films. Like it's the quality level. Because like not knocking like the CW and things like that, but I watch modern shows that are like have like a you know, CG, like, you know, like The Flash or Supergirl and things like that. And like this show is like a tier above, and it's just like, you know, it's not like a, like some big things on Sci-Fi Channel, for crying out loud. We're used to them being like crappy CG historically, but like the just the all the talent that is in that film, or excuse me, show is phenomenal. It's way more than I thought it was gonna be.
And I think it's also attributed to the fact that it's only 8 episodes instead of like having to force itself, forcing the budget to stretch for 24 episodes. They decided to keep it to a nice 8, making the show really utilize their time and budget to really create something amazing. And I think it stacks up definitely. I would give it a golden sip in my opinion, but I give it a golden sip. Oscars, I know, is to be announced.
I will have to finish it because yeah, although I'm enjoying the show, I'm not saying that I'm in love with the show. Like, I need to finish the show first.
Agree. But also, to reiterate a point I said in the beginning, if you want to understand adaptations, look at this. Look at how they turned a 4-issue thing into a whole season of a show, stretched it out, and you made it feel cohesive. And you weren't afraid to change things. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Netflix bought the rights a million years ago, but they've yet to adapt any fucking shit whatsoever. But Nemesis and Superior, they're two very short graphic novels.
Yeah, because they bought like Mark Millar's. 4 or 5 issues each. Yeah.
And those are prime for a live action adaptation, and we have yet to see anything for them.
I would
and
love miniseries of that. They would both be great. Like, they can make miniseries out of it and just call it, like, how they do, like, the house on Blight, the mansion, Bly Mansion. Like, those series, how they do, like, oh, these are separate series, but it's under the same banner. They could do that with Mark Millar's work, because, like, I don't know.
I've only
seen
one episode of that mansion or manor or whatever.
I just meant, like, how, like, they're two different series.
I don't like it whatsoever.
I haven't seen it. I just meant, like, how they're, like, two different series, keeping it the same banner.
Yeah.
Because, like, Superior should be
like,
one season.
Like American Horror Story.
Yes. Like, just keep it on that. Keep it that contained. And Superior should be its own. Nemesis should be its own. Nemesis is another, like, fucking... That one is just, like, you're not here for the complex, deep story. You're here for the twists and the fights. And it does it so well. It does it so fucking well. And that's what, like, this is, too. But, like, with dark and funny. The show, I didn't emphasize this enough. I kept saying wacky. The show was legitimately also very funny. And, like, the one-liners they give in conversation, like, Sax is legitimately one of my favorite characters made because he balances being shitty, being funny, being a person, and vulnerable. I think it was good. Yeah, that was this episode, Oscar. Oh, my God. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and I got to see his ass a lot.
Yeah, did you like them cheeks?
Yeah, they're okay. They're okay.
It's clapping them cheeks. That was this episode of Burnt Out Coffee, and I guess it's time for a little house cleaning, baby. Thank you for watching. If you enjoy the episode, guess what? Give it a like. If you're on Facebook, give the page a like. If you're on YouTube, why not subscribe to the channel? Are you on one of our mini audio platforms? Follow the podcast. Get up to date with stuff we have. If you enjoy my work, I'm Enrique Rosado, our writer. Rosado, if you enjoy Oscars, he's Oscar Fernandez. I was about to do the thing you did in the other episode. At Oscar Farts. Some stuff, just some quick plugs and promos of what we do, because if you enjoy what we said, you'll enjoy all this other stuff. Oscar does now every Saturday or every alternating Saturday, he does a
giveaway.
It's always
Saturdays.
It's just Saturdays. Yeah. Over on his Instagram and Facebook page, Oscar Farts on Instagram and Oscar it's just F Arts, right, on Facebook?
Yeah, it's just F-Arts. Yeah,
F-Arts on Facebook. You go over there, go like and follow those platforms. He gives out prints of like his original artwork. They look amazing. Y'all just follow him. This dude's doing shit. Go check it out. If you like this podcast and you want more kind of, if you enjoyed how we talked about Happy, the weirdness mixed with these weird tonal shifts of like realistic stories, go check out Internet 24. It's an anthology storytelling series. If you're listening to, wherever you're listening to this, guess what? Internet 24 is there. As well as check out.
And don't forget Cat Trails. I'm caught up.
Yeah. check out my webcomic Cat Trails. It is on Webtoon and Tapas right now. You can go check it out. It's a fantasy sci-fi series. Not nearly as gruesome or dark as Happy, but it is a fun, enjoyable
A lot more lighthearted.
Yes, indeed.
Think One Piece and Scott Pilgrim.
I'm going to steal that because I like that. I'm going to steal that because I like that. It is One Piece meets Scott Pilgrim. I'm writing that down. Write that down, Oscar. Write that down. I'm going to use that on all my promos. But basically, go check out what more we have. Thank you for sticking around. And our question for this ones are pretty easy. Did you like Happy? Do you think it stacks up? And our second question, if you can come up with an imaginary friend now that you're a grown person, what would it be? What is your imaginary friend? What is yours, Oscar?
I want like a sad creature, like a platypus that has just lived a harsh, like rough life, and he's just like just, you know, just always down in the dumps.
Aww. I want a corgi that's also a slime. So it's like it takes the shape of a corgi, but it's like bright green, but it's also a slime, and it wraps itself around me and has its head here, but it has like a corgi butt here, and it's just like a slime corgi. We have two different moods, don't we? Oh my god, oh my god, the Wi-Fi. You literally became like a three-faced monster as a response to what I said. It literally was you going... you still are that, and that is scary. Oh, it looks terrifying. Oh my god.
I'm your imaginary monster.
No, give me my slime corgi. Thank you for watching Burnt Out Coffee, and like always, Oscar's gonna hit us with our famous catchphrase as we go out. Oh, now he's frozen in a laughing position. So whatever your catchphrase is, Oscar, make it super audio only. Because, oh my god, your face is half the wall now. This is becoming wild.
Well, until next time, folks, stay happy. I gotta message you. There's something wrong with this audio. Hardcore.
I really hope he thinks that noise I made was an audio mess up. See y'all next time. Bye.